listening to Tech Talk Radio, proudly sponsored by D-Link, building networks for people.
I don't think anyone should think this is a license to continue to breach copyright. iiNet is not responsible for stopping it.
There's no real demand for censorship of the internet in Australia. There's no other country in the Western world, at least, that's trying anything like this.
Netflix aren't better at anything, but we think we've got something, and we call it the iPad.
And today, we're delighted to be present at the creation of digital radio in Australia.
Senator Conroy is completely botching the implementation of this filtering policy of his.
For adults who want to be able to watch the other material, we're not proposing to do that.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to today's edition of Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McColl. The internet is a living, breathing entity. Each day, something new rears its head. Sometimes it's good, sometimes not so. Last week, Lydia Davis drew our attention to a new social networking site which is sending shivers down the spine of many parents and law enforcement experts alike. Introducing Chat Roulette, a website that allows random strangers to talk face-to-face via webcam. The media feeding frenzy began early last week with articles in most major newspapers, including the Melbourne Age, Sydney Morning Herald, the UK Guardian and the New York Times. According to Alan Long, a researcher for Hitwise, online global sensations are few and far between, and there is no guarantee of whether Chat Roulette is a flash-in-the-pan novelty or whether it will be leveraged into a long-term idea of substance. He said that this smart piece of hacking, or mashing, from a Russian teenager that makes use of Skype to connect people around the world, and as the name suggests, it's a bit of a roulette gamble on the strangers you'll connect to via your webcam. As the word started to spread and a media-driven peak on the 16th of February, Chat Roulette currently stands as the 481st ranked website visited by Australian internet users on the 17th of February, down from the peak of 356 the previous day, and the number 2 webcam website behind Coastal Watch. Chat Roulette at face value looks relatively harmless. The concern is that it will connect unsuspecting people with a raft of unscrupulous villains who don't have the same motive in mind. It's certainly not for the young members of the family, nor for the old ones for that matter.
This week on Tech Talk Radio.
Microsoft and Yahoo cleared to tackle Google in the US and the EU. Google faces class action claim over Buzz privacy. Is the MacBook Pro finally going to get its Intel Core i5 upgrade next month? Google traces recent attacks to Chinese schools, and there are security warnings aplenty, with Microsoft and Mozilla releasing patches last week. First up, though, here's the latest from the Tech Talk News Desk.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, search giants Google and Yahoo join the movement against Senator Conroy's proposed net filter. The federal government defends its decision to cut commercial television license fees. Email scammers cash in on Haiti earthquake relief efforts. And the good, the bad and the ugly of 3D television. Welcome to Tech Talk News. The Australian Library and Information Association has been joined by search engines Google and Yahoo in a coalition aimed squarely at Senator Stephen Conroy's proposed net filter. The coalition, called the Safer Internet Group, says that the government's present internet filtering plans are ineffective and will risk the benefits of a free flow of information. Coalition members have also suggested that filtering of all refused classification content could block material that has a strong social or educational value. The ALIA says it does not recommend the use of internet filtering technology in public libraries, and that filtering has been shown to vary in its effectiveness, blocking some sites with useful and legal information, while not fully protecting children and others from illegal, objectionable or offensive material. No comment was forthcoming from the Senator's office about the Coalition's comments last week. The Federal Finance Minister, Mr. Lindsay Tanner, has defended the government's decision to slash licence fees for commercial free-to-air television networks by $250 million over the next 2 years, saying that the global financial crisis had a lot to do with the decision.
The substantive issue here is that we have got the Australian free-to-air TV sector in an extremely fragile state because of the global financial crisis and changes in technology, being asked to take much of the heavy lifting in moving Australia to digital TV and producing a huge benefit for the government and the Australian public by freeing up spectrum that can then be sold for other purposes.
The Communications Minister, Senator Stephen Conroy, says that he made the decision to protect the amount of Australian content on commercial television. But last week, Mr. Tanner had no comment to make about whether the financial concessions were made with assurances that the money would in fact be invested in the digital switchover or on the generation of Australian content.
Look, On the fine detail issues, you really need to talk to the Communications Minister about these things, but the broad position is as I've described it.
Mr. Tanner's comments were made after the Communications Minister, Senator Stephen Conroy, spent an afternoon in January skiing with Seven Network boss Kerry Stokes on the Colorado slopes. The Sydney Morning Herald reported last week that the minister and the media mogul spent an afternoon together at the exclusive Beaver Creek in Vail, Colorado, 1 month before the $250 million cut to commercial free-to-air license fees was announced. The federal government's announcement has attracted strong criticism from rival media outlets, especially the subscription television industry, which has been left out of the deal altogether. The United Nations Children's Fund, UNICEF, says that Australians are being targeted by internet scammers soliciting fake donations, masquerading as the Haiti earthquake relief effort. Mr. Martin Thomas from UNICEF said that Australians need to be wary, however, of scammers sending fake emails appealing for monetary donations.
It is a despicable act. What we're finding is large numbers of fake emails that are spinning their way around the world, purporting to represent UNICEF and appealing for funds, but linking to bogus sites, which is essentially robbing us of money we need to respond and looking to defraud those that are genuinely trying to donate.
A spokesperson for computer security company Symantec said last week that the bogus emails were originating from a number of different places, but that infected computers made it very easy to distribute those spam emails, so that detection of the criminal was very, very difficult. Symantec also advised internet users to never click on emails or open emails from unknown sources, and that if people wanted to make a donation, ensure that they typed in the web address of the charity into their web browser directly. And while we expect to see 3D televisions on the market in just a few months' time, and Sony, for example, has released its first 3D Blu-ray disc player, some scientists are concerned about the health effects of 3D on our eyesight. Mr. Mark Pesci is a writer, researcher, and virtual reality pioneer. He spoke on government radio last week and said that 3D television will work in a similar way to the virtual reality goggles of the 1990s, and that it works by showing slightly different images to each eye.
So basically your brain has to fake it out. So when you sit down, perhaps, and watch Avatar, you might notice that when you're watching the 3D version of it for the first couple of minutes, it feels a little weird, and then your brain just sort of gets used to it. And that's a sign that your brain is watching some of the cues and it's starting to ignore some of the other cues.
Mr. Pesci worries that the effect could be more profound in children whose nervous systems are still developing.
And the danger here with a lot of exposure to 3D television is that it could perhaps get your brain to start ignoring 3D cues in the real world that it should be listening to, and it will start to affect your depth perception.
The ABC's PM program approached several manufacturers of 3D televisions last week. While most declined the opportunity to comment, Sony said it had a third-party research institute study the impact of 3D viewing on people's health, and that researchers had found no adverse consequences. I'm Dr. Ron, and that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
On Fader One, I'd like to introduce a long-time listener to Tech Talk Radio.
Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Warlock.
Yeah, how's it going?
Oh, look, it works.
Based on a patent that Apple put in 2006.
Can I do a rant at this point, just because you've mentioned something that reminded me of this?
We haven't heard that they have, AFAC has appealed the decision yet.
No, haven't made their decision. Well, not that we've heard, anyway.
They can't keep putting laptop-scale processors in their iMacs and expecting people to buy them at top dollar.
Oh, gee, it went that well, did it?
It went that well that I didn't know that,
If the Australian government tries to take on Google, I know who my money's going to be on.
And there's people who are making good television in Australia.
Yeah. Don't look at me. Sorry. All right, let's talk about Mr. Stephen Conroy, the Right Honourable. Is that what you call a senator?
Senator.
Right?
The
a lot of people have called him a right something or other.
They do. Anyway.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Ah, yes. Hello, everybody. Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. Sitting across in front of me today, one and only Dr. Ron. Good evening, Dr. Ron. How are you travelling?
Yeah, travelling well, thanks, Andrew. It's very blustery and blowy here in Melbourne.
Yes, if we disappear tonight, you'll know why.
Yes.
It's just one of those really strange nights in town. It's been blown away.
We've had lights flickering and you even had power off altogether at your home earlier tonight.
Yeah, there's probably been a lot of people wondering, where's the stream gone? Well, it's back now. And if you're not wondering where the stream gone, don't worry about it. Nothing to see here. Move on. Dr. Graham, good evening. How are you going?
Good, Andrew. How are you?
Yeah, look, you know, it's good. We're back on the radio again for another night of rest and relaxation, talking about things that are near and dear to us, the technological side of things. I was listening to your news there, Dr. Ron, about the 3D TV sort of things.
Yes, that was interesting, wasn't it?
It was. Mr. Avatar certainly put his 5 cents in on the weekend.
What happened to him?
Well, over the course of the
week... This is James Cameron, who
correct.
Made Avatar, yeah?
Correct. Over the course of the weekend, he had a little sojourn in front of the TV cameras and said that... Avatar is due to be released on Blu-ray on April the 22nd, which is correct.
Okay, good.
But he then went on to say that the 3D version of Avatar will be released in November, to which 20th Century Fox came out today, or Fox Studios came out today and said, no, absolute rubbish, nothing, no, it's not, that's just wrong. So it looks like that if nothing else, we now have clarification on the fact that Blu-rays and 3Ds and things like that are actually... a little bit further off than we probably anticipated if the movie studios are actually not going to go down that path just yet.
But it's still set for a Blu-ray release on the 22nd of April,
a 2D, right? A 2D Blu-ray release, yeah.
So
yes.
Have we seen any 3D Blu-ray discs released of any kind?
No.
That's the technology for the future.
The Blu-ray consortium, the people that pass judgments on technologies like that, only confirmed the Blu-ray 3D spec in December. So it's still very, very new. And as a result, there's very few players out there that actually play 3D Blu-ray just yet.
Of course. And you need special screens and so on to go with it. You can't just play it on a domestic screen.
That's right. You probably need one of those special projectors, which I probably think that would probably be more beneficial to invest in a projector rather than a screen. But that's just me at the moment.
Well,
you think I might
so,
change
just
my
for
mind.
Image size versus, yeah, for image size for your dollar, you'd probably, want to do that.
Yeah, because if...
But to get 3D to work from a projector, you'd need a... You couldn't just project it onto a normal white painted wall. You'd have to have a screen that reflected the image, preserving the polarization, which a normal white painted wall wouldn't.
That's very true.
So you'd need a projector and the matching screen to go with it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Sony's released its first 3D Blu-ray disc player, so you're saying you need a screen to go with it as well, Graham?
Well, the Blu-ray disc player the screen would be for the I was talking about in the projector scenario.
Oh, okay.
At the moment, I've got a video projector at home that I set up, and I just project it against a white painted wall.
Yep.
I don't have a specialized screen for it, although I should. It would look better on a special screen, but it works on a normal wall. But 3D wouldn't, because the wall would, when it reflects the light back,
would scatter
the polarization.
If I have one of these new 3D Blu-ray disc players, I then need a 3D television?
You need a 3D display device of some kind, whether it's goggles or a television that's got the 3D built into it, or whether it's a projector like I was talking about that does the polarizing thing and you have the polarizing glasses like we did in the cinema.
Yep.
You'd need one of those technologies. You'd need a special display device that does 3D in some form or other, yeah.
And there are a couple out there. I've seen them.
And there's several on the way. The manufacturers are sort of ramping up to... there's a lot of talk around the industry about them coming up.
That's one of the exciting things about... I'm heading off, as you guys know, to Las Vegas in about a month and a half's time now.
Yep.
And that's going to be one of the big things that I'll be looking at, which is the 3D domestic side of stuff as well.
Yeah.
We can...
The name of the show you're going to is the...
NAB. The National Australia Bank. No, just kidding.
No?
The National Association of Broadcasters, probably the biggest broadcasting show there is on the planet, and it happens Easter every year.
So this is where the broadcasters go to find out some of the equipment that they're using, but also some of the equipment that their viewers will be watching their product on.
It's a bit like a lolly shop in a lot of respects for people
who are in
broadcasting sort of things. It's you get to see all what the manufacturers are providing for content creation, because you've got the two sides of this sort of thing. You've got the content creators and you've got the content consumers. Now, most people listening to this program will be a content consumer, such as your good self. You sit there and you watch a movie on the television set. Well, content creators have to actually generate, edit, post-produce and supply that material in such a format that the content consumers can actually see it, and it works well for them, whether they have it on a television set or on their wall or whatever like that. So,
yeah, so what you produce has to be compatible with whatever display devices are going to be sold to consumers.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
That's right. So at this point in time, from a broadcasting point of view, it's relatively easy to broadcast the technology. But from a receiving point of view,
there's not much out there just yet.
I think Channel 10 did a bit of a gimmick thing about a weekend or so back with red and blue glasses that you got in a trash mag.
That's been done probably two or three times in Australia in my lifetime anyway.
Yeah.
And of course, yeah, earlier than that wouldn't have been possible before colour television.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's been, red and blue glasses, but modern 3D is better than that. I mean, modern 3D is done in full... With red and blue glasses, you can't get full colour.
And that's correct. That's why the polarisation works so well.
And yeah, and the image quality is never... The 3D quality is never quite what you expect either, because it just looks weird. And well, yeah, the polarised glasses work really well in the cinemas. Interesting. There's different technologies. Is that too? Are you aware of that? There's different types of polarizing glasses?
Not really, but I do remember sitting in the cinema and turning my head left and right, and you can actually do some freaky things.
Now, that was at IMAX. That was at IMAX, and the IMAX polarization is at 45 degree angle either way. I'm holding my hand up, and
good
we've
for
got
radio.
No webcam, not good for radio. 45 degrees either side, so that the two images are at 90 degrees to each other, so they don't interfere. But the problem with that at IMAX is if you tip your head on the side, if you lean on the person next to you...
Which is quite possible in IMAX because it's such a big screen, you sort of get motion to like, you go with the flow.
You lose the 3D effect and the images start to blur and combine in an unfortunate way. Now, I saw Avatar the second time at a normal suburban cinema, which had, I think it's called Real D... as the 3D process, which is different to the one they use at IMAX. And it's still polarizing glasses, very similar, but the glasses, instead of being polarized on an angle, were circularly polarized in opposite directions. So one was circularly polarized clockwise, and the other one was circularly polarized anti-clockwise.
I have a picture here of someone with Google eyes and one of those masks.
So the naked eye, they look just the same. But the advantage of the system they were using in the suburban cinema where I went to see it the second time...
Now, this was a digital cinema, I take it?
Was digital cinema,
yep. So it came off a hard drive, not a piece of film.
Was Village. I'll tell you which chain it was. And it was very good, very well presented.
Mm-hmm.
And the advantage is that you can tip your head on any angle and you preserve that 3D effect. You don't get any loss of
the circular polarization.
Circular polarization. So that's an interesting...
It is, isn't it? Because I know from a content creation point of view, we actually need two video channels, which is for your left eye and for your right eye. So I can't speak about cameras because that's not my speciality.
Of course, at that end of the process, it doesn't matter because as far as the front of the projector, all you've got to do is have two images. It's from there on that you apply the polarization. So, the same input could be used for either projector.
Yes.
It's just a technology of the viewing system.
So is each eye seeing a slightly different image?
Well, that's how 3D works. Yeah, that's right. So the idea is to present a slightly different image to the left eye as compared to the right eye, and the brain uses that among some other information in the real world to interpret depth, to try and work out how far away objects are. And you can do this experiment yourself. If you pick a spot some distance off, a couple of metres off, so I'll do it in the studio here looking at the door, and I'm going to hold my finger up in front of, at arm's length in front of my face and close one eye, and I line the finger up with the door frame. Then I close that eye and open the other eye, and you'll see that your finger has moved quite a distance to
it's
one
been
side.
Displaced.
So what's that telling you?
The
difference between how far things move that are close to you as compared to how far things move that are away from you tells you how far from you they are relatively. So that information tells my brain that my finger is much closer than the door frame.
There's been reports in the media too that a lot of people have come out from 3D films feeling quite nauseous too. It's obviously really, getting into people's brains and doing some
and
nasty
the reason,
things.
Well, the reason for that and the reason why some people get very confined in the cinema, you go there, you sit there for 3 hours and you don't do that even every day. You do that once every few weeks if you're going to a 3D film in the cinema. But if you start getting 3D devices in the home, it starts to become a worry because there's this system of different images on your different eyes is only one of the ways that your brain actually interprets depth information. You can do another experiment. You can close one eye again or put a patch over one eye and hold out your finger and move your head from side to side a little bit. And again, your brain will figure out that things in the distance don't move as quickly as things that are close to you.
Your brain's also aware that your head's moving. So it's taking a lot of factors into consideration.
Yeah, it's your brain's got a whole... Really. Yeah, it's got this whole gyroscope system in your ears, so it knows how your head moves, it knows how far it's moved, it's watching the difference in the image as it moves. And, you know, there's other systems that are similar to that, and it knows information about how it's focusing on objects. So when the little muscles in your eye change the shape of the lens to focus on an object that's close as compared to an object that's distant, the brain uses that information as well. So, and none of those other things are affected in a 3D movie. You're only getting the cue from that one system.
This is what the gentleman in the news was concerned about. He said that certainly there's different images being shown to each eye to achieve the effect, but he was worried that this could have an effect on, especially on children whose brains are still developing and whose nervous systems are still developing. It might.
That's correct.
Because what was his concern, though?
The brain. Well, if you were to sit and watch one of these 3D screens in your home for several hours a day.
So you watch 3 or 4 hours of television a day as a kid.
And then you also, after you've watched your 3 or 4 hours of television, you go and play, you know, 3 or 4 additional hours of a 3D game on a computer with a 3D display that's the same technology. You know, it starts to add up to quite a significant amount of exposure. Now, what that does is that trains your brain to ignore those other signals and only interpret depth from
your visual cues,
from the differences between the eyes, and that's like mistraining your brain.
So we have a potential of having a lot of rear end collisions in the not too distant future.
That's
because
right.
People watch
yes,
too many 3D things. Is that what you're saying? Because they can't judge
distance.
Because
people's depth perception will be impaired.
Wow.
By the incorrect training of their brain to interpret, you know, because it's actively training the brain to ignore cues that it would otherwise add to the system. And that's why in the first few minutes when you go and sit down in a 3D movie...
Your brain has to adjust, really.
You do have to adjust. It feels really weird at the start before your brain says, okay, something's going on here. I'm going to ignore the information that's coming from a balance system, and I'm going to ignore the information that's coming from my focus system in the eyes, and I'm going to ignore all these other cues. I'm going to ignore the fact that the edge of the screen doesn't change, but the middle of the screen does change. And your brain sort of says, okay, now I can interpret this for the next little while. And then when you come out of it, it says, oh, okay, this is a different world, and now I've got to, you know, use all that information again.
Okay, well, yes, obviously there is cause for concern. Anyway, you are listening to Tech Talk Radio. That item was not on the rundown. Dr. Ron is here. Dr. Graham is here. And, yeah, you got some Coro for us, Dr. Ron. I saw some come in tonight, but because I didn't have any power, I couldn't print it out.
That's
so
all right.
I'm going to resort to the Apple technology here, which is an iPhone. And if I have some that you don't have, off you go.
Very good. As always, correspondents. We're also all logged into the chat room. If you'd like to chat to us in real time,
yeah. Hello, Jono.
Oh, yeah. TechTalkRadio.com.au. Yeah, come and join myself and Andrew and Graham, of course, and also TARDIS and Dr. Laney's there and Jono's there. And the first item of correspondence is from Mountain Wombat, who is also in the chat room tonight. Maybe this should be in /rant, says Mountain Wombat.
Yes, and can I just say to people that have submitted the /rants, time has got the better of me at the moment. They will be there, so keep sending them through. Off you go.
But as a Windows mobile user, I get tired of the slagging off at the platform. Graham, this is what Mountain Wombat's complaining about. The announcement of Windows Mobile 7 refreshes the UI and is creating a lot of interest since its announcement at Barcelona. I use a current Windows Mobile 6.1 phone. The multitasking is the reason I use the phone. I can listen to a podcast in the background with a turn-by-turn GPS navigator running. If a call comes in, the podcast pauses. I can take the call. The GPS keeps on running on the screen. I can open the appointment book, make an appointment, still have the GPS running, turn right 200 meters. When the call finishes, the podcast starts up again. I can and have created apps to do a particular job and can add it to the phone without waiting for approval from a control freak of a company that made the device I paid my hard-earned cash to buy. This is one step above the other smartphones. I don't want to lose this to gain a shiny new name brand on the back of my phone. That's Mountain Wombat's comment after we were...
Good rant,
I
like that.
We made some comments about the Windows mobile operating system last week, Graham.
I had a Windows mobile phone. It was an HTC phone, I think. And, yes, I had a very bad experience with this phone. And it wasn't...
In what way?
It wasn't a good PDA and it wasn't a good phone.
Oh, just general usability. It was a bad experience, was it?
It was just a bad experience all around. In particular... It was very slow. It did multitask. In fact, it multitasked almost without giving me the choice, because it was almost impossible to close programs down other than to reset the device. Because whenever you went out of a program, it just left it running in the background.
I think everyone has a problem like that from time to time, and I think it's not just operating system specific.
But the worst effect was that it was very slow and clumsy to switch from whatever else it was doing, even just sitting in standby mode, to switch into the phone interface when a phone call came in. So if I sat it on the desk and then rang it from my desk phone, I would start hearing ring in my ear in the desk phone coming from the network. The network's obviously ringing the phone, and the phone sits there and it does nothing. And it has to change applications to bring the phone application up. It needs to go and find ringer.wav and load that into memory and then start playing it.
Media player has to fire up.
Media player has to fire up. Something has to fire up to play it. I don't know what it is.
Can I make a gross generalization observation here?
But the first two or three rings were lost while the phone got itself organized.
Yeah, that's not uncommon with most phones, I've come to the conclusion. Maybe some of the Symbian systems are probably a little bit better, but I can assure you that these things that I have holding here, which has got that glossy logo that you meant on the back, is very much of the same ilk.
Does it take time to start ringing, does it?
Takes time to do a lot of things. Mine turned itself off the other day and refused to turn itself back on again for about 5 hours. I put it in the fridge. I thought, because Adam Turner had explained about his overheating iPhone.
I was about to ask you if you just pop the battery out and pop the back in again, but you can't.
No, you don't pop anything with an iPhone. No. You've only got two buttons you can press, and there's only so many combinations you can do when you all else fails before you go and throw it at a shop and say, fix this thing. But anyway.
Jono on our chat room says iPhone has the same problem. Yes,
exactly. Well, I agree.
I haven't actually used an iPhone in practice. So,
in anger.
Yeah, no, they do. They're great, except if you want to make phone calls on them, I've come to the conclusion.
But the iPhone shouldn't be, because it doesn't multitask unless you've done nasty things to unlock it. So
don't
it should
stop
be
there.
Able
Keep
to.
Going.
Should be able to do it. The other thing, the criticism of Apple for being the control freak, that's perfectly true. They are control freaks about their apps and all the reason. But that's part of why the platform's so stable, or should be stable.
Oh, rubbish.
That's how they
rubbish.
Work to keep the thing stable.
That's a rubbish.
Rubbish, rubbish?
Rubbish. I disagree
why
with you
totally.
Why
is that
rubbish? Apple just want to maintain control of their product. That's,
well, they do.
That's really it, because they want to be... And I think it's nothing to do with stability, despite the fact that Steve Jobs came out and said that Flash creates more problems on Mac computers than any other piece of software. Like, it's look, once you jailbreak these things... And what I mean by jailbreak, that is you run a little program which removes control from the Apple software, so it lets you do other things on it. It gets faster, which is really good. B, you can run more applications on it. And C, the whole thing just seems to function 10 times better.
But, of course, if you do that, then it's no longer supported by Apple.
That's correct.
If something goes wrong, they won't help you.
That's right. But if you want to, just
to its normal state.
Go and plug it back into your iTunes and go restore. And it's back to where it was.
That's right, yeah.
So it's not an issue.
That's what you have to do.
Anyway, we were talking about correspondence. Boy, we get distracted here.
Oh, we do. We do. Mountain Wombat on our chat, who contributed that post there that I read out before, he says, not having that problem with HTC's Titan 2, but many problems with the older Telstra Jazz Jam. I'd agree, Mountain Wombat.
You had a Jazz Jam, didn't you?
Yeah, that ran Windows Mobile 6, and that was horrible.
And look, we had Microsoft in the studio last year, didn't we, saying they were doing research into the way people use their phones so that they could improve their mobile platform. So maybe that's part of what's been going
on. Mobile 7's about to come along very shortly.
Well, that's right, yes. This is the point they're making, yeah.
A TARDIS3 on the forum contributed to a thread about...
He's on the chat too.
He is on the chat as well.
Everyone's on the chat tonight.
TARDIS. Which media centre has the highest WAF? This is a forum
WAF
thread.
The WAF acceptability factor.
Correct, the WAF acceptability factor. If you want to contribute to our forum...
VHS recorder normally works well for that.
Well, he mentions that. Go to forum.techtalkradio.com.au. I find the whole genre of how we watch stuff to be somewhat frustrating and fraught with poor options, says TARDIS.
Yeah, welcome to the land of a consumer.
For many years, we had videotapes, different formats, VHS beta, dodgy video players where the heads would constantly need cleaning, picture quality iffy. Then VCD, DVD, HDD, DVD, Blu-ray, which are all really the same except for capacity. Some players play this, some won't. So confusing. Because of the increase in capacity...
Have you looked into mobile phone plans lately?
Because of the increase in capacity, it was assumed that discs would last forever, which is obviously not true. I found discs to be unreliable. Quality of movies is very dependent on where they come from. US versions seem to be better than Australian versions, but they are still discs, says TARDIS. Hard drive storage is my favourite. Prices of hard drives are falling. They're relatively cheap and data can be easily backed up. A few years ago, when I searched for the cheapest, most effective media streamer, I found the answer to be an original Xbox. You can now buy them for around $20 running XBMC. The interface is simple. It plays any format you can think of and is a breeze to use. I purchased a Western Digital unit, which is the one that we've been talking about recently, for someone and was dismayed to find that it doesn't support some formats, WMV, for example. My XBMC, which is the Xbox Media Center, had no format problems. I haven't tried to play WMV on that little Western Digital box, Andrew.
Why would you want to?
Well, you might just have a WMV file there, and you think,
I'll play it on your computer or something. No, I know that's a defeatist attitude, I know.
Yes, to play it on your TV.
But hang on a sec.
It would have supported WMV.
Check the specs during the break.
Yeah.
Hey, But what I will say about some of these new formats is there's the file formats evolve, like the actual movies and things like that evolve. And one of the ones which is terrific is the MKV format, and it's doing the rounds really well at the moment. It supports a lot of things, high bandwidth video. It also supports subtitling and things like that. Things which, like your traditional, you know, movie files, like your AVIs, whatever container you've got, even your movie MOV files, they don't support subtitles and things like that, and other metadata that comes along with movies these days. So find a player that works for your needs.
Adam Turner's joined us on the chat room. He says the WDTV will play WMV. Maybe TARDIS had an old version.
There is an old version, not the live version. There's one before that which doesn't do anything live. It does it all dead. But it might be the one he's talking about.
It also could be to do with the way the WMV file was encoded. It might have been an unusual encoding in some way, a strange size or a strange frame rate that the thing couldn't deal with.
And we've got a show to do. Dr. Ron, quick, any more Cora?
There's a quick hello. Quick hello from Rose. I recently stumbled upon your show and find it a wonderful source of technological news, which I can never get enough of. We're all the same, Rose. As well as exposure to the Australian accent. Ha ha, which was what I was looking for in the first place.
Are you, Rose?
I didn't know we had accents.
Oh, she's in
the
States.
We don't have accents. Other people in other places in the world have an accent.
In any case, she says, it might interest you to see former United States Senator Ted Stevens' media spotlight, says Rose, if you haven't already.
She gave us a link.
I was reminded of the clip when you aired Australia's Senator Conroy's statement. Guess we all have him, hey. and the link that she posted was to the 12th of July 2006, a daily show from the US, like a little video about the Net Neutrality Act, and the head of the Senate Commerce Committee, which was Ted Stevens, who regulates e-commerce in the United States, where he's banging on about interwebs, and it's the internet's not a big truck, they're a series of tubes. He says, I guess everyone has them. We had Mr. Stevens, you've got Mr. Conroy.
Oh, yeah, there's got to be one in every country. Is he trying to censor the internet too?
Well, I don't know. I don't think he got that far. But anyway, good to have you on board, Rose. Thanks for the follow-up. And if you want to send us feedback, you can send it to feedback@techtalkradio.com.au.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio, proudly sponsored by D-Link, building networks for people.
Absolutely. Thank you very much to D-Link for sponsoring us. And upward and onwards, I guess. Some interesting news this week, which I sort of came across late in the day. Domain registration rules could soon be tightened. You know how everyone likes to register a .com.au and a .this and a .that? Well, in particular, I'm talking about our namespace.
Yes.
Less than a quarter of people who have registered domain names have given fully accurate information. This is according to ICANN. And 8% of registrants failed to give a single piece of accurate information about themselves. Does that surprise anybody in this room? No. The report was commissioned after concerns were expressed to ICANN from law enforcement agencies, which often ran into dead ends when trying to track down criminals online. Many criminals set up websites that can be used as a forefront for criminal activities, you know, launch phishing attacks and to install viruses on computers who visit them. Now, that doesn't surprise me either, because if you look at the recent sort of barrage of banking spams, they're all derivatives of the banking entity, whether it be Westpac ANZ or whoever it is. They'll register a domain name which is very similar or has the words, you know,
like
Westpac bank into it. Yeah.
Westpacbanking.com.au or...
Yeah, exactly.
Your westpacbank.com. Or something.
That's right. Yeah. And they register it, and then they send you, they fudge it all up, and then they go phishing, and people, silly people, click those links, and
I'm surprised that in the .com.au namespace that those get through, because they usually put you through the ringer when you're trying to register a domain name to ensure that you have a right to represent yourself as what it is that the domain name says.
Well, yeah. No, I haven't had that experience. I've been able to...
What they put you through the ringer through is something slightly different, that there is a close and substantial link between the name you're using and the business that you're doing.
That's right. So if,
but
I
if you were...
And...
Yeah, but they don't actually control intellectual property rights, so the right to use the name Westpac would be something that they would... a fight that they would not get involved in.
But if I tried to register the name thewestpacbank.com.au... I couldn't get that through. They unless I showed them a business name certificate or a company certificate.
No.
You remember the night we were in here and we decided to register /rant.com.au and there was a race to see who could register it first? Exactly the same rules apply. You don't need to you don't need a document. You have to be a company to do it. You have to have an ACM, but that can be fudged. All you need to do is go to an ASIC register and type in any company name and it'll give you an ABN number and put it in. And so it's a substantial thing about what you're doing.
Yeah, they might check that you do business with the Westpac Bank, or that that your business is somehow connected to the Westpac Bank, or that your business involves the word Westpac somewhere in it, even if it's not in connection with the bank. It might be the Westpac Fruit and Vegetable Company,
or maybe it's like initials like West PAC, which is the private aviators company or something.
Exactly right. Yeah. And they intentionally wouldn't get involved in any dispute about the use of a name or a trademark or anything like that. They would leave that for the trademark owner to come after you to protect their name. That's not the domain authority's job. It's the job of a trademark owner to defend their trademark.
That's interesting. I've registered domain names on behalf of customers before, and I've always been grilled about it, but I suppose that makes sense. But what you're saying, Andrew, is that they're going to tighten the current...
Basically, these rules are going to be tightened. I don't know how they're going to enforce it, but nonetheless, maybe they will enforce it. I don't know how. But I think it's good to try and minimise on that type of fraudulent activity, which there's plenty of online at the moment. If I get another CUA member's spammy thing, I'm getting about two or three every hour at the moment. I've had to do some serious filter blocking. So, there's a lot of it out there. So just beware. And if you're registering domain names, be prepared to go through the hoop a little bit more in the next little bit. Now, in other interesting news this week, is anyone familiar with the R4 chip? Do you know what an R4 chip is?
What's an R4 chip?
Okay, people with Nintendo DSs are probably going, I know what an R4 chip is. I've got one. Now, what an R4 chip is basically it's a little chippy thing that swaps out where the game goes in on your game player. Now, these things basically let you hack the DS, so you can download games off the internet, plug them onto a little, flash drive, and stick it in the back of your chip, your DS, and off you go.
You can jailbreak your DS.
Yeah, pretty much jailbreaking the DS. But instead of buying the games, you can download them offline, and of course that's a really cost-effective way of doing it. We don't encourage that. But what's happened is Nintendo recently has basically been chasing merchants and people who sell these chips to say, hey, stop, and there's been a bit of court action and things like that about it. But apparently those who run on eBay and Amazon and all those sort of cases have actually got away with it scot-free. So poor old Nintendo, in trying to cut down on blatant piracy, has really had no luck whatsoever, because they just all go underground, which is probably one of the things with the internet, isn't it? They'll all disappear and come up in other areas. So
we have an unfortunate law in this country. And
just one?
Well, no, we have several, but in this field, we have an unfortunate law. In some places in the world, you would be quite entitled to modify your Nintendo, whatever it is, or your PlayStation, or whatever it is, to play copied discs. I won't say pirated discs, but copied discs. And you might justify that by saying, I want to be able to make backup copies of my discs that I've bought and use at home.
Fair enough.
So that I'm not using the originals in the player that the kids are going to scratch up and whatever.
Fair enough.
I'm just going to use the copies. And I might modify my player so it'll play the copies. And in some parts of the world, that would be, as you say, fair enough. And you know, you would think that would be fair use to a reasonable person, the fictitious reasonable person. But in Australia, we have a peculiar law that says that it's illegal to circumvent copy protection or digital rights management technologies. So although it might be legal to make a backup copy of something for your own personal use, if you have to break encryption, like on a DVD, to make a copy of it, or if you need to chip your PlayStation or your Nintendo to allow it to play copies, then in Australia, that's a legal problem.
I think we,
and that's ridiculous.
It is crazy. I think we own the only PlayStation 2 in the country that hasn't been chipped at home. Yes, Mrs. Dr. Ron religiously buys all original games, and that's all we play.
Yeah, but they're probably $1.50 down the Caribbean market, aren't they?
Dr. Laney in the chat is asking, is the content legal, though? In Australia, it's legal to make a backup copy, provided you don't have to break encryption or circumvent protection technologies to do it. So for an audio CD, it's perfectly legal in Australia to make a backup copy of that and use it for your own private purposes.
To rip it and stick it in iTunes.
And to rip it and stick it in iTunes. If you've got a DVD, because it's got
protection on it,
CSS, then you're not allowed to use DCSS or any of those other ones to copy it.
So you rip it, you stick it in iTunes, then you delete all your files off your computer, which people do, and then you want to rip it back off your iTunes. You're defeating copy, DRM there to pull it back off your iPod.
Off your iPod.
Yeah, you're defeating copy protection to bring it back to get your copy back. Now
it's DRM that Apple has put on it.
That's right. Subsequent to stop you from it. Pulling it back down. Isn't that the same thing?
Apple don't apply DRM to the files, and there are programs that can read it back off your iPod. I don't know whether they'd be legal in Australia or not. It's possible they might not be.
Isn't this a grey area?
That would be a very grey area, and that would be something you'd probably have to take to court to find out.
Now, speaking of grey areas, when we're talking about these sort of things, one of the biggest problems in this country at the moment is video games don't have an R categorisation, which means that anything which comes into this country which is grotesquely violent or full of adult themes ends up being put in the M15 plus category, which is a...
Well, no. What should happen is that anything that can't qualify for M15 plus, so if it's, you know, not... If it's too extreme to show a 15-year-old or whatever it might happen to be, then it doesn't get crammed into that category. It should get refused classification, and it becomes illegal to import it into the country.
And then if it gets refused classification, then Mr. Conroy's filter can kick in and no one need know anything about it. Now, where does that leave a company overseas, such as, pick Walmart, for example, a major manufacturer in the States or retailer in the States, who is advertising something on their website which is legitimate in the United States market but yet refused classification in this market? Does that mean their website will be blocked?
Yes, their filter will block it.
Yes.
Oh, it's so silly, isn't it?
You won't be able to see Walmart's website from Australia.
Because you might potentially be able to buy that.
That's right.
And it's legal for Walmart to ship it to you. It's not legal for you to cause Walmart to ship it to you. You're breaking the law in Australia.
Gamers are scarier than bikers, says a minister. The Australian politician who opposes the lifting of censorship ban on adult-only computer games has said he feels more threatened by gamers than outlawed motorcycle gangs. This is out of the Sydney Morning Herald. South Australian Attorney General Michael Atkinson, who has the right to veto the lifting of the national ban on computer games, rated too violent and extreme for consumption, said he had received a threatening note from a gamer. It goes on. Yes, what's the world coming to? It's and the reason why I talk about that and talk about the classification is that I'm trying to make a point that the laws are really doing themselves a disservice. They're really, this is a real tangled web that we're starting to see in this country now, because it means that online shopping services anywhere around the world that can sell an R+ or an R-rated video game theoretically will be blocked to Australia because it's been refused for classification. Now,
that's right.
Where does that leave things like eBay for international sellers who legitimately sell? You can't block eBay, surely.
Well, in eBay's case, they have a presence in Australia, so what they would have to do would be to make sure that they don't list on ebay.com.au stuff that would be refused classification.
That's too hard. I wouldn't give two hoots about that.
They would have to block access to the other eBay sites. So in Australia, you could only see ebay.com.au. But
yeah, it's good, isn't it? And like, for example, if
eBay would have to give two hoots about it because they've got a presence in Australia and they'd be forced to comply with Australian law. Or move out of Australia and we'd lose the eBay presence in Australia, is more likely.
Then you've got Google, but we won't go there for the time being because that just opens up another hornet's nest. Let's talk briefly about AAPT's announcement during the course of the week. Now, Dr. Ron, when I mentioned this to you, you said, yeah, right. But anyway, allegedly...
AAPT is Australia's branch of New Zealand Telecom, is that right?
Maybe. You might be more versed than I am about it, but they are an ISP in this country.
Yes.
And they do sell broadband, and they're actually selling, I guess, Australia's first unlimited broadband package.
Oh, yes. Now I remember you telling me this, and I did say, oh, you're right.
Now, if that's not a red rag to a bull in a China shop, I don't know what is. But anyway, they've decided to announce, and also they've done a music deal as well. But
and that's part of how it works. You have to sign up for your home phone and their music site and everything else. You have to bundle it all together to get the true, completely unlimited version.
But do you think truly that true unlimited is actually a viable thing? Like, surely...
No.
90% of the...
Yes and no.
90% of customers would be law-abiding citizens. When I say that, fair use citizens. But you're going to get some people that are just going to sit there and download and download and download until...
And in the global market, yes, completely unlimited is, of course, the way you go. You pay for the size of your connection, your bandwidth that you can pull through, but not for the amount of data you use over a period of time. And worldwide, that's, you know, the sensible way to go. In Australia, just because the market is predominantly the other way, it becomes impractical for individual ISPs to do it. AAPT is Australia's third largest telecommunications company, wholly owned subsidiary of Telecom New Zealand, just
there you
to
go.
Clarify.
The Kiwis are invading.
On their website, they say, feel the freedom of unlimited broadband with no download limits and no throttling. They're bolded, highlighted, they've got on their website. Download all of your favourite music, films, TV shows and podcasts 24/7, anytime, any day. No caps, no data download limits, no worries.
Interesting.
I wonder how long it will last, because in Australia they have to be very careful. If they say that, then they have to... It's not like in America where you can say unlimited with a little sub-note that says, oh, yeah, 500 megabyte fair use.
Acceptable use policy applies,
yeah.
In America, of course, they're going the other way. ISPs over there that have always been... had no download limits are now starting to apply them, and consumers over there are up in arms because you put on a 100 gig limit on a plan.
It's interesting the terminology you use there, Dr. Ron, because I know with mobile phones in this country, you can't say a phone is free when you're actually paying for it in the contract. It's not free.
No.
And that's why you'll see the ACCC has come down on phone companies and they say it's $0 on the $49 plan or the $69 plan or whatever it is like that, because they cannot say free because it's not.
AAPT saying this is offered to customers from just $99.95 per month on ADSL 2 Plus or $109.95 per month on ADSL 1.
Do you have to have everything bundled?
Yes, you do. Yeah, as I think Graham was explaining, you do have to have your telephone and everything else bundled with the service. But
so
still...
This is a big, bold grab for the market.
It's very, very bold. I don't know how long... I don't know if it's going to be sustainable.
They'll only get the serious downloaders at the start.
Yeah, absolutely they will.
Tan Shannon, she's an AAPT spokesperson. This is what she had to say.
AAPT has fired the first shot in the telco broadband war. We're the first of the major telcos to offer 24/7 unlimited broadband. That's no caps, no throttling, as much broadband as you want, day and night, for one fixed price. We believe this will force the other major telcos to follow suit, which in the end will benefit everyone. We've also launched an Australian first deal with EMI, giving our customers unlimited streaming on over a million songs. AAPT has formed this partnership with EMI not only to offer great value music downloads, but also because we believe in supporting the music industry and paying artists for their material. It's that simple.
Yeah. Yep. It's a big, bold move, and yeah, notice she didn't go about talking about you have to bundle everything, but yeah. But the EMI deal is quite interesting, and it's streaming. That's not a download. It's a streaming.
It's a streaming service.
Which means it's a bit like Pandora. Remember Pandora before they blocked it to this country? Oh, that was great.
I did try to investigate their music thing. It's called InSong or something. And, unfortunately, if you're not on AAPT, you can't get access to it, even if you want to sign up.
Oh, it's an intranet-y type sort of thing, is it?
So I wasn't able to determine what it's like. Didn't have a bit of a read about that. It looks interesting.
It says stream your favourite tracks from 1 million songs in the AAPT InSong music store. Any song, any time.
All right. Well, let's join back here in a few months' time and see how they're going and see if we've had any resurgence in unlimited broadband plans. I can't see any of the other telcos following suit.
I know in the past of ISPs who have tried unlimited plans. I was signed up to one at one point. Those ISPs are no longer in business.
Yeah. Just before we go to the break, just a couple of little throwaway things. Firstly, if you're interested, we were talking about 3D movies before in the opening of the show. It's Avatar is coming up against The Hurt Locker. Have you guys seen The Hurt Locker?
Not yet. The Hurt Locker won, by the way.
The BAFTAs?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, James Cameron's wife.
Ex-wife.
Ex-wife, yes, correct, thank you. James Cameron's ex-wife.
I'm sure that's an important distinction for them, yeah.
She won the BAFTA for Best Director, now up against hubby. So is this going to start new marital relationship issues here? I can sort of sense, because even in the Academy Awards, which kick off on March the 7th, I think, this year, once again, Avatar is up for a lot of gongs, as well as The Hurt Locker, and they are both terrific films. I don't know whether you've seen them, but it's worth seeing both of them before you go and pass judgment on them. So have you boys seen The Hurt Locker? We've all seen Avatar, I know that.
Yeah, I haven't.
Okay.
Not yet. No, it's on the list. Something we're going to see very soon.
It's well worth it. It's a very shocking film, a very real film. I have a colleague of mine who was in that war zone at the time that it was all happening, and he said very real. But anyway, there you go. A bit of trivia for those movie buffs who are into 3D films and good films in general. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio, the motion picture edition. We'll take a break. Back with more in a moment.
Listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Tech Talk Radio.
Cast your mind back to the 90s.
This is a tad awkward, but not quite as bad as Dr. Ron's choice of music.
Anyway, went in there and that.
Before we got distracted beautifully by that, I was going
to
talk about...
Somebody rings me every day at the moment to want to change my light globes.
If that's it. It was a challenge and an opportunity, wasn't it?
I don't know. good. Glad you cleared the air on that one.
It's out there.
Yeah, it is. As Mulder would say.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show. Tech Talk Radio.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio, proudly sponsored by D-Link, building networks for people.
Yes, welcome back. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Andrew McComb, Dr. Ron Graham in this evening.
Yes.
We've got a view from the couch coming up very shortly. Adam Turner is going to have one of his rants.
And Mad Lids joined us in the chat room.
Cool. What's she doing up that hour of the night?
Actually, there's a cast of thousands there. Jono, Mad Lids, TARDIS, Geeky Girl, Adam Turner's there, of course, Warlock, Marky Mark, and all of us. So come and join us, chat.techtalkradio.com.au.
Hey, Lid and I are going to Google when we're in the States. Well, she's in the States already, but I'm going over there very shortly, and we're going to go talk to Google, which is going to be fun. Don't know what we'll ask them yet, because I haven't thought about it, but we'll get there and we'll do some good interviews, and you'll hear them here on Tech Talk Radio, amongst all the other great gossip and stuff which is coming out of the technological convention that is the National Association of Broadcasters happening this Easter in the United States.
We'll look forward to that. You'll have some good stuff coming out.
Yeah, I'm not going to ring in because the time zone's going to kill me. That's why I'm surprised that Lyd's joined us this evening. But anyway, hello Lyd if she's there. Google got attacked recently. Do you remember this? Well, this is what started the fracas between Google and the Chinese government.
Yes.
Recently, they were hacked, attacked, whatever you want to call it. A spate of internet attacks, in other words. Anyway, it's all been traced to two schools in China, according to reports, but the Chinese sources have responded by denying knowledge of the strikes, as you do. According to the New York Times, security experts investigating a strike of hacking attacks on the American companies have been linked back to their origins in mainland China. It's a bit like Eugene Kaspersky. He went to the School of Cryptology. I reckon they must have a school of hacking in China where they teach all these great kids how to do things because they're very clever.
And the Secret Service type people in China presumably can just redirect their connections to make them appear to come from a school.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Easily solved. A spokesperson from China's official Xinhua news agency said, "We were shocked and indignant to hear these baseless allegations which may harm the university's reputation." Let me speak in English.
I thought that was Chinese.
The report of the New York Times was based simply... Ni hao ma, an IP address. Given the highly developed network technology today, such a report is neither objective nor balanced.
Okay, moving on.
Cop that, Google.
Hey, just speaking of these sort of things, I'm a Firefox user because of...
Still?
Yeah, still. I'm sorry. I there's a few things on that system I like. But can I tell you, the amount of upgrades and patches and things like that that both organisations have done of recent times, such as I'm talking about Microsoft as well,
yeah,
is just driving me to gargars. If it's not one, it's the other company doing an upgrade. And I've had about three Mozilla patches, and because you run it on about half a dozen computers, it's sort of like you never see the end of it. You know, one at work and one on the laptop and one on another machine. And it's, oh, my goodness.
But they make it nice and easy. Just you load it up. They say, do you want to install the update? You say, yes. You go make your epic coffee. It's all done.
Yeah, but Windows 7, you have to run it in as administrator mode. Otherwise, it says I can't do it. And it's
the
like,
screen goes black and I've got to click a button.
No, it comes back and says it's failed. And you have to physically, you have to go and turn the antivirus off. And
installer,
then
they haven't got their installer sorted out to do the right thing and display that little button for you.
Also, Microsoft Redmond announced that it had found a cause of reported rebooting problems. Have you heard of this? With the patch that they released?
Okay.
After some Windows users installed a recent patch, the systems were infected with malware. Specifically, the Aluron rootkit, a type of stealth malware that's used to hide other malware infections. Rootkits typically change important system files to perform their obfuscation. And in this case, Microsoft said those systems changed caused major problems after a kernel patch, which was shipped in last week's Patch Tuesday, was installed.
Okay, so it only affected you if you had already been infected by this rootkit.
Correct.
Well, that explains why none of my customers were infected.
That's good. You're obviously doing a good job for your customers.
Yes.
But yeah, it just goes to show, that'd be very frustrating. Oh, good, I feel safe, I'll just do this upgrade. And then it just gets blue screened and blue screened and blue screened. You don't see that in Windows 7, have you? Seen a blue screen in Windows 7?
No, Windows 7 tends to just reboot without showing you the blue screen.
Oh, no. I've never seen any behaviour like that on my Windows 7 machine, Touchwood.
It's hard to get it to...
Very difficult to get it through.
Yeah.
But you've been able to make it do that.
You do some unfortunate things and...
Things we won't tell you about in this time slot.
Yeah, no, it's... I was being very mean to a system, I must admit.
Were you? That's unlike you.
But, with these Windows updates, every now and then we get these stories about Windows updates that cause failures or problems and... people get affected. It's still important that you install them, even though, yes, there is a small risk that something can go wrong and your system might have a problem. It's still less risky than not doing the update, which almost certainly leaves you vulnerable to an existing problem. So, with Windows updates, please do them, even though you hear these reports about problems, because, as I say, it's much more risky to not do them.
All right, well, Mozilla had released Firefox 3.58 and Firefox 3.018 for Windows, Mac, Linux, patching five vulnerabilities, three of which rated as critical. So update your web browsers, whichever ones you use. Which one are you using at the moment, Dr. Ron?
I use Chrome fairly predominantly unless
It's very fast, Chrome, isn't it?
It's good, unless I need to do something on eBay, in which case I stoke up Firefox because Chrome just can't handle the applets and the plugins and things that eBay uses.
Yes, if you're using plugins to do extra things, then, Firefox is your browser of choice. But it's compared to Chrome, it's slow as a wet week. So, if you just need to get to a web page and you want it now, then, stick Chrome on your machine. You'll never look back.
Geeky Girl in our chat room says, is it pronounced Mozilla or Mozilla? Quandary. ..
Let's do an office poll. How do you pronounce it, Dr. Ron?
Mozilla.
Likewise, I'm a Mozilla person. Dr. Graham?
Mozilla.
Yeah. Okay, it's unanimous. It's Mozilla. Next item on the agenda this evening is...
That was easy fix.
Yeah, it was. Microsoft ties up with LinkedIn. Now, has anyone else played with LinkedIn?
Very briefly a long time ago, but I don't use it.
I tend to steer clear of all these funny things, but
LinkedIn is the business-oriented... social networking system.
Yes, it spams you like you wouldn't believe.
Oh, does it?
Well, if you sort of try and invite someone, it doesn't relent. It just keeps going. So.
Oh, really?
But anyway, Microsoft has released a new tool which will embed the LinkedIn social networking service within the Microsoft Outlook. No. LinkedIn Connector, which is what it's called, will allow users to access LinkedIn features while viewing and managing emails. The service will be offered as part of a free social connector component for Office 2003, 2007, and the brand new 2010 when it comes out.
I'm using Office 2003. Is that current? What's the current Office?
Seven.
Office 2007,
yeah,
is
yeah,
it?
Yeah, 2007.
Is that the one with the round buttons and the everything
yeah,
changed?
Right. Yes. It's got the ribbon.
Yeah, the ribbon. That's yes. the one.
Office 2010 is not far off.
Okay.
So sit tight and do an upgrade down the track.
I'm happy with 2003.
Nothing
is that
with
a
it.
Naive thing to say? Or
the main thing
not
is
at all. No? There's a lot of users out there feel exactly the same way.
Yeah, and you probably swear and curse when you get a .docx file or an .xlxx file in your thing and you go, how on earth am I going to open this?
Look, you double-click on it. Word says, would you like to download the compatibility pack? You click yes. It's done.
Andrew doesn't like clicking easy. Buttons, does he? He doesn't like...
There's what do you mean? I don't know. I've got lots of buttons over here I can click.
Careful, we'll click one to shut us up.
You might.
No, there's a nice simple patch to that you can get from the Microsoft website so that all the new DocX and all those formats that Windows 2007 creates, and they're getting more and more out there now, you can read them on your Office 2003 system without any problems.
Excellent. Yeah, there's nothing wrong with 2003. It's good. Mm. It's a bit lightweight too. Works well. Can process it, still has silly spell checkers. You know our little system that we're our little thing that we've got going at the moment, sending in tech pranks.
Email us your tech pranks.
Whoever was who sent us last week to change the autocorrect function in Outlook is just on a winner.
What did you do? Did you try it out? Did you in the
I haven't done it yet because we haven't had the opportunity to get to said victim's computer yet. But because she's wised up to it, she turns it off now before she goes out, so we can't even get into it electronically.
I've got a quick tech prank contribution for you from Rose, who is our first time correspondent. Earlier in the program, I haven't personally done or witnessed much, but would sneaking Rick Astley's video into a colleague's PowerPoint presentation count as a tech prank? We think it would, Rose.
That would count as a really good Rick roll.
A really good Rick roll. It was for a computer science course review session, so the class was amused.
So she Rick rolled the entire class.
She did. I wasn't the perpetrator, she says. Also, my roommate was once unintentionally foiled when she tried to use my computer while I had an auto clicker running. An alternative to the old mouse ball stealing trick is to tape transparent tape over the optical part of the mouse.
That'll do it.
That'll do it every time. I like the Rick rolling.
That's good.
One in that the PowerPoint presentation.
That could have caused nausea in that science class, I would have thought, but anyway.
Rick rolling for the uninitiated is to trick somebody somehow into playing a particular Rick Astley song on their computer. And like, normally, you link to what's supposed to be an interesting video on YouTube, and it turns out to be yes.
It's like what that chappie did in Wollongong, I think it was, who did the first rickrolling of iPhones for those that had them jailbreaked on the Optus network. So, very good. And speaking of rumours...
And rickrolling.
No, rickrolling here. Well, there is. Rumours are pointing to MacBook Pro update next month. Now, pity JD's not here because he'd be able to confirm, deny, or just glaze over when we mention these sort of things. And in fact, I think he talked about it last week. But MacBook Pro is finally going to get its Core i5 update next month, which will push the Apple little laptop things into the realms of being able to work relatively quickly. They still may not have issues. Well, they will have issues with flash and things like that. But at least you'll be able to do things. So it's a long-awaited upgrade, I think.
Yeah, the i5 is one of the newer Intel processors. The successor to the Core 2 Duo and the Core 2 Quad series.
They're a great series of processors. They work very well. It's great, and especially if you actually get the applications that can utilize all the cores at the one time. And there's a lot of them out now. Say, for example, if you need to compress video files from or convert from one file to another format, there's a program called Sorenson Squeeze, which is fantastic, and it's one of the very first applications that uses all your cores, all your everything in your machine. And it's really funny because you can open up the command palette and the task manager
you're talking about, yes.
And you can feel like you're getting value for money for your PC to see all those bars running
up the top.
it's really, really satisfying. You know that there is nothing else you can do to make your machine run that little bit faster. So anyway, there you go. There's some rumour and scuttlebutt. Adam Turner has a view from the couch, and we're running a little bit late this week. So
it's unusual.
Let's not steal any of his thunder this week and get straight to it, shall we?
Abandoning Node Clean Feed is a smart move in the anti-filtering war of words. I have a lot of respect for Electronic Frontiers Australia as it leads the campaign against Stephen Conroy's plans for mandatory internet filtering. Even so, I've been less than impressed with some of the lobbying efforts to date. Hopefully the new Open Internet campaign will see the anti-filtering campaigners make some headway with mainstream Australia.
It's pretty clear that Stephen Conroy doesn't care what Australia's online community thinks of mandatory filtering. The only thing that will force Conroy to reconsider filtering is if it becomes a mainstream issue, something your average person on the street cares about. That's why I didn't think much of the Twitter and Facebook protests held on Australia Day, when most people were out enjoying a barbecue with their mates. It was the equivalent of holding a protest march in your own backyard on Christmas morning. No one's paying any attention except a few people who already believe in a cause. The key to winning the filtering debate is winning the media war. Electronic Frontiers Australia knows this, but it's at a distinct disadvantage. The mainstream media thrives on soundbites, a single, simple quote that sums up an argument. These are what make the front page or the nightly news bulletins. Anything more complicated is relegated to the opinion pages or current affairs programs. I mean real current affairs programs, not tabloid rubbish like A Current Affair and Today Tonight. The mainstream media is a hungry beast. It doesn't take sides, you just need to know how to feed it. It thrives on soundbites and photo opportunities. It's easy for filtering's advocates to get their message across in a simple soundbite, such as, think of the children. These comments make it onto the front page. Unfortunately, the arguments against filtering are a little more complicated and can't be explained in a 5-second grab, so they get lost in the mainstream media coverage. That's why it looks as if the mainstream media is biased against the anti-filtering movement. Thanks to soundbites, your average person sees the filtering debate as a vocal minority fighting against the efforts to protect children from pornography, even though that's not the case. The situation isn't helped by the no clean feed concept, which plays into Conroy's hands by putting the focus on pornography. While the sentiment is noble, calling for no clean feed implies that you support a dirty feed, at which point you've lost the soundbite war. Don't bother trying to explain yourself. By now the newsreader has already moved on and is talking about Britney Spears' latest antics. By launching the Open Internet campaign, Electronic Frontiers Australia has a chance to reboot the anti-filtering movement and redefine the battlefield. Open is a powerful word that conveys volumes in a simple soundbite. If you oppose a clean feed, then you must be a pervert. But if you support an open internet, then you must support the forces of good. I know that's an oversimplification, but that's what soundbites and mainstream media coverage are all about. The next step for the Open Internet campaign is to make some great and powerful friends. Basically celebrities who have the respect of mainstream Australia, whether they deserve it or not. Few entertainers and sports stars doing the rounds of the talk shows to explain the Open Internet campaign in simple terms would have a massive impact. A few rich benefactors wouldn't go astray either, helping to buy some mainstream advertising time. With the launch of the Open Internet campaign, anti-filtering efforts need to look beyond Twitter and Facebook. If the Open Internet campaign can grab the hearts and minds of ordinary Australians, then we'll have politicians by the ball.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
It's very true what Adam says there about the media and life. They do. They live in sound grabs and stuff.
He's a smart guy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's very good.
No clean feed.
Yeah,
that's what he's saying.
Yes, and they've changed it to open internet, which I think changed is also it, yeah. Just generically feels a little bit better too. So anyway, that was Adam Turner. You can hear him every week here on Tech Talk Radio. Sometimes he comes in live. I'm surprised he hasn't come in on Skype yet this evening, but nonetheless, nothing like a red wag. But anyway, yes, that was Adam Turner's view from The Catch. You can also catch that on podcast. He has his own very own feed there, and they come in to your
You can get a
device.
Podcast to just get Adam Turner's views from the couch.
Can
yeah,
you?
Yeah, you can.
That'll wow. be, that's good value.
Yeah, techtalkradio.com.au.
Save listening to all us prattling on.
Yeah, it cuts to the chase, doesn't it? Sometimes it even appears there before it goes to air on the show, too.
Oh, you get a sneak preview.
If you sign up to that podcast, yeah. But don't forget, you can get this podcast, too. We can be in your ears for, you know, an hour. How long do they go on the podcast?
An hour 40-ish, maybe, depending on how much music we played you in the show.
Yeah, yeah. All right, well, let's make it a little bit slower this week, shall we? Play another music track. What do you reckon?
All right.
All right, no, just kidding. Yeah. Oh, no, why not? Let's go to a music break. We'll be back with more after this.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio, proudly sponsored by D-Link, building networks for people.
Now, let's talk about Freeview.
Hey, someone just joined the wave.
They're the people I want to avoid the calls from. Comes in very handy, especially when your files get really, really big and corruption takes place.
So you want AAAAAAA.
Dude, it's not even a beta. It's just for us to play around with.
They also cited taxes and freight costs.
Just mount it on your desktop and run it direct.
It's a big risk.
Oh, you watch the webcam.
Yeah.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show, Tech Talk Radio.
Greetings, everyone. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio, Australia's one-way technology radio show.
You're back on Tech Talk Radio. Dr. Ron here, and the program, of course, is hosted by Andrew McCollum, who's in the studio, and Dr. Graham, who's also in the studio.
That's what I do.
Yeah, you do. Apologies tonight from JD. But he'll be joining us again next week.
Generation Y person just sends a text, sorry, not coming in tonight.
He is a bit Gen Y like that, isn't he?
He is, very.
I noticed, Andrew, out walking the dog during the week, we have a hard rubbish collection in our area at the moment.
Yeah, we do, and it's mostly over the street thanks to the wind tonight. I had to dodge traffic, these things blowing across the street on the way.
Boxes and bits of polystyrene and stuff blowing everywhere. I've noticed every second, if not every single one, every rubbish deposit that I walk past, printers, televisions.
Yeah, I must admit, I plead guilty. I put out a printer.
There you go. It's the flavour of the hard rubbish collection at the moment.
And guess what? They're not being picked up.
They're not either. No, they're not.
The little men in their Valiants go past them.
No, they just keep driving. Same with the disposable printers. They're just there, and then they're out there.
Can I tell you something completely non-technically related?
Going into landfill. No one's recovering them. Yes. What's unrelated?
Well, the hard rubbish collection was supposed to be today. And traditionally, those that come along and rummage through your goods on the nature strip tend to be messy souls. And things get tipped up everywhere and emptied out on the lawn. And you go, oh, I didn't live like that. Anyway, for that very reason, we have an old barbecue, which is about 13 years old, which I thought, it's time to put out and get a new barbie. So I thought, rather than put it out during the middle of the day, I'll put it out at night in dark, 10 o'clock in the evening. For the hard rubbish guys to come around this morning. I left for work at about 7 o'clock this morning. It was gone. Someone had come around between 10 p.m. and 7 a.m. in the morning and lifted a fairly heavy barbecue, which would take two or three people to lift, let me tell you.
Isn't that bizarre? The other thing I've noticed a lot of is stereo speakers and old stereo equipment from lounge rooms, like circa 1980s, 1990s type equipment.
I put some speakers out. They went very quickly.
People have gone and updated to new 5.1 surround systems or whatever and put out the old speakers.
Yep. How about the number of computer monitors, CRT monitors on the CRT nature strip? I put two out and someone came along and took the yokes out of them, took the backs off, cut the cables off.
Oh, that's interesting. Copper recovery
and did all that sort of stuff.
Is that why they're doing it? I was going to ask, what on earth could be gained from taking such things? There's no value in repairing these things.
No, they're just cost effective to repair. They just chop bits out of it and leave it on the nature strip in 20 pieces for the poor guy to come along and put in the back of his truck.
And they chuck all the salvageable bits into a huge bin, and then when it's full, they take it down to their local scrap metal dealer or something.
Yeah.
Interesting. But I was particularly interested in seeing the number of little inkjet printers that people just chucked out. And I've ranted and raved before about these things being just disposable, consumable printers.
Why do you rant and rave about it? It's just the way it is.
Well,
you've had bad printer experiences.
I have. Well, you're right, Graham. I shouldn't rant and rave. It is just the way it is, isn't it? We buy a printer, it runs out of ink, we throw it away, we buy another printer.
Yeah, I said all, I don't.
But people do. Yeah, a lot of people do because
the ink cartridges aren't that dear.
Well, they are in a lot of cases. You pay almost as much for a new printer as you do for the set of ink cartridges. Certainly, by the time you've put two or three sets of ink cartridges there, you've spent more than you have on the printer itself. And the industry is fairly upfront about it. The business of selling these little printers is not the business of selling printers. It's the business of selling ink cartridges.
Yeah, I go to my local ink man. He gives me, and that's not a brand, he's just a man who sells ink. Yep. But he sells refills. And I can tell you the inkjet printer that we have in the office I've had for about 4 years now, and it's still going strong. And yes, keep refilling them. And it's good. It's very
cheap. I've seen some extraordinary printer modifications with pipes and tubes and big extra tanks of ink that...
But how does the printhead move if that's the case?
The flexible tubing. So instead of having the print tank in the head, they have these big external tanks and little flexible tubes coming down to it.
So the printer would look nothing like what it originally looked like. It's obviously had holes cut above it so that the tubes can move.
Yeah, it looks,
you wouldn't want to have a...
looks like something out of a mad scientist workshop.
You wouldn't want leakage.
No, you would not.
It could be
I've seen them after that's happened, it could be very detrimental
to everything beneath
yes.
it.
Yes.
I'm going to go out on a limb here, Andrew, and say that you are an exception. You're not the rule when it comes to inkjet printers.
Really?
Yeah,
I've had good value for mine.
I hate to say it, but my policy is don't get inkjet printers.
No, no.
Laser printers are so much cheaper to run, and they're not
cheap to buy too.
Well, they are now. They used to be a bit more expensive.
I've still got my very first Hewlett Packard HP4 laser jet black. I think I paid $1,200 for it about 20 years ago.
Which HP4 have you got?
The L.
HP4L, okay, yep. Little one. Yeah,
it still goes. I can still get toner for it. It still goes.
Yeah.
On a per-year basis, it's cost me, $20.
We've got LaserJet 4Ms at work, which still go strong. They're slow by modern comparisons, but they keep going and going and going.
I remember...
The 4Ls are a little tiny printer. They're square and boxy and not very tall, and they've got a very tight paper path turn at the back, which tends to cause problems in a lot of them. That's why they got redesigned. The 5Ls are a completely different shape.
Mm.
But you've obviously got one of the good ones that's continued to work. It
still keeps on keeping on. The only dilemma I've got with it now, it's a parallel port, and you think you can get a computer with a parallel port in it these days?
It's harder. What I would do with that printer is I would connect it to. You can still get parallel port print servers to connect it onto the network, and I'd just put it straight on the network and be done with the parallel cable.
Yeah, geeky girl in our chat saying she's one of these people that goes around sniffing on people's nature strips and selling things on eBay.
On eBay,
look, fantastic. I think it's good. I think that's
if someone gets some value out of it.
See, ultimate in recycling, and that's what our society lacks.
Probably should comment that it's technically illegal to go and pick up stuff.
Yeah, but it's only illegal if you get caught, isn't it?
Well, yes, that's right. And no one's actually in practice going to prosecute, but technically...
I'd love to have seen who got my barbecue last night.
It's owned by the city council.
Is it? Oh, because it's on the council property or something.
Because you've put it out and you've given it to them. You've turned over control of it to them, so it's their property.
Is that a Victorian law or is that an Australian law? Like, does the same apply, say, for our listeners in Cairns, for example, if they have a hard rubbish collection up there?
I haven't done research into it. I would imagine so. The laws aren't usually that different from state to state.
Because it's funny, though, because you look at things that you put on the nature strip. I've got, the old 4x3 tellies. I've got two, three working ones. They're destined for the nature strip, but I just don't have the heart to put them out because they're really good nick and they're great sets and all that sort of stuff. But yet, we've all got flat screens these days and widescreen stuff. And what do you do with them?
If they've been there for a year or 5 years, Andrew, you haven't used them and they're just taking up space, you're tripping over them, you've got to ask yourself the question, why am I keeping this stuff? Am I ever going to use it ever again? The answer's no.
You do. Look, I'm not sentimental with the rubbish that I put on the nature strip, but there's just some things a television set which, sub $2,000 and it's 4x3 and it works a treat.
That's one thing I was thinking when I was walking around looking at all this rubbish. I was looking at televisions thinking people would have paid thousands and thousands of dollars for these 10 years ago, and now they're just getting discarded.
I've got a Sony one at home that's got a slight fold, and 68 centimetres. It's just going to have to go out because it's got a bit of a fold on it. It's not actually usable, but yeah.
Would have had pride of place in your lounge room when you first purchased that.
You need to make a video clip. Kick the television in or something. By the way, did you know The Young Ones is back on ABC 2? They brought that back. That's going to be great.
Young Ones?
Oh, that's showing your age, isn't it? Or is it showing my age?
Well.
good on you, ABC. All right, let's a couple of other things. One of the things I came across, I had a bit of a laugh on the weekend, one of these great things that they've built into mobile phones these days. It's only in Japan, this. Did you know that the Japanese have built a device, it's a headset, goes in your ears, and it can pick up what your eyes are doing, whether they look left or right or up or down. And they've plugged this into mobile phones so you can actually answer your call. Like, you can slide the bar on your iPhone across by looking to the right when the phone rings. Isn't that bizarre? You're all...
absolutely speechless. Why?
NTT Docomo, the Japanese network.
Yep.
They're the people behind this. And they've basically managed to make a pair of earphones that can sense eye movement to control your mobile phone. And you've got to ask the question why. It's because it's Japan and you can. Don't you think that'd be handy? While you're driving the car, you can change the music track by looking to the right.
Yeah, but if you accidentally glanced at next your phone up. And just looked at it, suddenly something might happen. It might interpret that as a turn the volume down or a press 3 on your dial pad or something.
Presumably, you'd have to have some sort of an activation gesture that, a sequence of eye movements that you're not likely to do in the normal course of events to get into the system or something.
What a great idea while you're driving a motor vehicle. Is your eyes are spiralling around. You're
that's good. It might make you look at parts of your environment you hadn't previously been aware of. Might be a good thing.
Well, especially if you've been watching 3D films all morning and you get out there and use your motor vehicle and use your iPhone connected.
Try and drive your iPhone. Oh, dear. The crazy Japanese, they come up with all sorts of funny little gadgets like that, don't they?
Have you seen their television programs? They're enormous. They're huge. The game shows.
They're epic game shows.
They're the ones. In other interesting news, apparently Apple has removed sexual content from the App Store, which has caused all sorts of outrageous remarks this week. Apple may not have made major changes to the App Store that could render many developers' applications worthless. And they've just heard that John Atherton, the developer behind Wobbly iBoobs. Now, if anyone's downloaded that app, could you please tell us on the chat what that is? Because I don't know anyone who has. But Wobbly iBoobs, who says that he just received an email from Apple indicating that this application was being removed from the App Store because of a new policy change. So there you go. They're going to take off all the girly things that the boys might want.
See, Apple doesn't want its App Store blocked by the net filter. It's a preemptive strike.
The Empire Strikes Back, yeah. Is that what you're saying?
they're doing some housekeeping.
Ah, dear.
Before Mr. Conroy gets his way.
While we're on the subject of Mr. Jobs, he came out the other day and said, this is according to Crunch Gear, Flash would murder the iPad. Now, really, let's be realistic, he went on to say. So, yes, he's been at it again, looking at Flash, because he doesn't like Flash. He was saying it'll never be on any of his devices because it causes all sorts of malfunctions and it's a cause for concern with a lot of repairs to Apple computers. So he's still on that ranting rampage too, which is interesting. Now, Windows 7, you mentioned this earlier on before, Graham, too, with...
Shake your iPhone iPod to enjoy realistic 3D bouncy goodness.
Oh, dear, he's gone. Go and look up. This is a rated
Wobble
G iBoobs. Program.
Sorry. you brought it up. You mentioned the war.
I did. It's a bit like the Shake the Baby application that was around for all of 3 days, if you remember that one on the Apple Tree. They got banned and taken down pretty quickly, I would imagine.
Has it really come to this? But, Graham, you need to make the most of it before, you know, Netfilter comes along.
Yes. Yeah. I need an iPhone first.
Well, yeah, that's
you
a thing too,
you
isn't really, it?
You know, you don't.
Anyway, Windows 7.
Windows 7.
Telstra are adopting the Windows Phone 7. Now,
Mobile 7.
Yes. Telstra has been confirmed as a launch carrier for Microsoft Windows Phone 7 smartphone operating system in Australia. The new software platform announced was made in Barcelona, Spain, and as part of the Mobile World Congress, which is where everyone goes to boast about their mobile broadband networks.
And
I noticed that
somebody lost one.
Soltra Hio was not present this year.
having lost his demo unit last year, isn't it?
Well, that's true. But you've got to remember, Telstra launched 42 megabits on their next G network the other day, which is fairly impressive. And then I think
it would be. Yeah.
Then Qualcomm came out and said, we've got a device which we're going to support. Here's a bit of, you know, a modem-y thing, but it won't be available for another 12 months or thereabouts. So it sort of defeats the purpose a bit, doesn't it?
Is Windows Phone 7 what we would have otherwise called Windows Mobile 7?
I'm trying to work that out, but I think that is the case. The new software platform was announced, as we sort of said, with handset launch partners with Windows Phone 7 will be HTC.
Yep.
So also the Samsung, LG, HP, Dell and Sony Ericsson are all going to launch devices using this platform. According to Telstra Executive Director of Mobile Products, Ross Fielding, they're going to be the first Australian telco launch partner and forge a close relationship. Now, this is going to be interesting. Are we going to see a threat from other operating systems against the Apple operating system here with Windows 7? Is this its last hurrah? Is Windows 7 mobile and all that really going to be the ant's pants?
Do you think the writing's on the wall?
Well, certain people seem to think so. We certainly had an ardent defender of the platform on the correspondence earlier today and in the chat.
We did Mountain Wombat.
Despite my reservations about having Windows on my phone, which might be a personal prejudice, but the battle's a long way from being over. There's a lot of work going into there's a lot of work going into the iPhone, obviously, but also into the new Windows 7, and also into the Android and those related platforms. And there's another one as well, which won't come to mind at this minute. But yeah, I think there's a lot of healthy competition around in that area.
It's certainly going to be a tussle, I think, between all the operating systems. Because what have we got now? We've got Windows 7, we've got Android, and really Apple, and Symbian is in there. So there's four players. Is there any? Have I missed anyone? I think that's probably the major four.
Yeah, I think there's another sort of big graphical user interface one that I'm not remembering, but I can't bring it to mind.
What's the Nokia one? Is that
well, the Nokia that's one? Normally the Symbian. Yeah, but that's not really quite in the same league as the full blown big ones, so yeah, not quite sure.
All right. Sony PlayStation on your Windows 7. How's this for a rumor? No one's jaw sitting on the floor when Microsoft demoed Xbox Live running on its new Windows Phone 7 platform earlier this week. Does this mean you can play games on your new device? This would be interesting. One of the possibilities, if we take Microsoft Senior Product Manager Michael Chang's comments to Tech Radar seriously, which is where this article came from, it means that, yeah, your Xbox Live on your Windows 7 thing's got to be game-related and stuff like that.
Hmm.
So maybe they are doing a bit of a push, Microsoft that is, towards the Apple market to try and get people to potentially play games on these devices. I don't know. Will that work?
What was the new... handset, if Adam's still on the chat, I'm not sure if he is. He had a new handset in here the other week.
That's a new
week.
One, the HTC.
He did with the big screen.
The
yeah.
HTD or the D2. I love it.
That's
I think
right.
It's good.
And that was running Windows Mobile with a special skin. And that was, as much as we've been bagging Windows Mobile, it was very, very slick.
Yeah.
Very, very nice interface.
So I'm just reading about it. As it happens, I had that page open, you know, in my browser at the moment, and yeah, it is a nice product. It was interesting to use it on that phone, that demo model that Adam had.
It's only available on the Telstra network. I think they're the only guys that have got a gig with HTC for that one.
That's part of that deal, yeah.
And that runs on Windows 7?
It's Windows 7, but skinned with their own special look and feel. So when I say skinned, it's Windows 7 underneath, but the outside looks like...
correct, the HD2. Thank you, Marky Mark.
HD2, that's the one, yep. $829 outright. It's not an expensive phone either.
Well, it's comparable with the iPhone. That's exactly the 16 gig iPhone is around that price if you wander into an Apple shop and buy it outright. By the way, one thing I worked out during the course of the week.
And this one has this is this buy things 16 on gig, but it's on a 16 gig micro SD, so you can actually swap out the memory, which is, of course, iPhone will never ever do.
No. No, give users control? Never. Never. So, all right, there you go, Windows 7. It looks like it's going to make a bit of a... And it'll be interesting to see how well it goes in the United States when I'm over there too.
The other one we forgot that Marky Mark's pointed out on the chat is RIM's BlackBerry.
Oh, of course.
We didn't mention the BlackBerry.
They're doing still great things. I know Brian in our office picked up a new BlackBerry. He said, I've had enough of this Apple and used a few other words. And the next day he rocked in with a...
The BlackBerry,
which he bought on eBay.
BlackBerry is very popular with people. I've never quite understood why. From a technology point of view,
they're very good for email and office-related things.
Yeah, so people say, but yeah.
People that use them love them. People have them swear by them.
Yeah, they do, and that baffles me. But anyway.
It's interesting there's people like...
Adam's just come up on our chat and said HD2's running WinMo 6.5, not 7.
6.5, not 7, yep.
Okay.
It's interesting that there's someone who's gone from the iPhone, Andrew, back to a BlackBerry, like you're talking about Brian in your office there. Did he have a BlackBerry previously?
No, he had an E71, E60.
A Nokia?
Nokias, yeah. Yeah, he goes through phones like a lot of people go through jocks. He's one of these people that sort of, he hasn't quite found his mecca.
His soulmate.
That's the one. He's tried with a lot of things. He's been through iPhones and given up on those, and he's moved into other areas. But it's very true, isn't it? It becomes part of you. Some people, like one of the ladies here in the radio station tonight, says, I love my iPhone because it's so me. And that's it. She's found her soul phone, for want of your terminology there, Dr. Ron. But and even one of the other boys here, he was showing me his new, you know, dream phone, and that was a Sony Ericsson. So everyone's got a different... perspective on what's right for them. I think that's very true, isn't it? You go into a shop and everyone goes, what's everyone buying? But that may not necessarily be right for you. Have a look and see. I know a lot of people just want a phone that makes phone calls. Well, there's very few of those around on the market. Although some of the prepaids that are out these days, the little cheapy ones, they're pretty good like that. They don't really have cameras. They might have MMS and SMS, but that's it.
I was just going to mention something just the fraction of a second before you said the word cameras, Andrew. My father has an old telephone, old Nokia telephone handset. He works as a contractor in places where cameras are prohibited. So there's a high level of security in terms of the areas where he's working. And as a matter of course, the security people at these sites always say you need to hang on to your phone while you go into the site.
My
father says, why? I don't want you to hang on to my phone. And they say, well, because there's a camera in it and we don't want people with cameras. He says, no, my phone doesn't have a camera. And they go, what? What do you mean your phone doesn't have a camera? Everyone's phone's got a camera in it. And they look at the old Nokia 6310, whatever it is that he uses, and They go, oh, it doesn't either. Oh, you can take that in with you. It's all
and
right.
They don't know that it's been modified by the spy shop and it has a full full HD video recorder in it or something.
That's actually very true.
But how many devices, mobile phone devices can you buy today that don't have a camera?
Not many.
Well, it's funny because of going to the United States, I bought a AT&T prepaid the other day and it rocked up on this. And it has no camera in it. It's a very old, cheap and nasty little... It might be the similar sort of thing that you're talking about. It's just a Nokia handset with a SIM. I just wanted the SIM, so you throw away the phone. It was only $30, but it didn't have a camera in it. So you can still get them.
Designed for running on American networks. Of course, these are the old GSM phones that we had several years ago here. But of course, in America, they're still using those GSM networks.
Yeah, they're a bit backward over there when it comes to mobile technology, despite the fact that Mark is rolling out the 4G stuff.
Yes. It's interesting, isn't it?
So, anyway.
Depends what carrier on and what you're doing.
Sorry, did you want to say something?
I wanted to say about the BlackBerry. One of the things that baffles me about the BlackBerry, or one of the things that makes me reluctant about BlackBerry is that in the work that I do, I'm often setting up Windows servers with Exchange and all that on. One of my primary criteria for a phone that's got email on it would surely be ActiveSync to be able to talk directly to my Exchange server. And BlackBerry, as far as I know, still don't do that. You've got to install their special software or something.
Well, it's a network feature that you've got to connect your telco with or something like that.
Yeah, to me, that would, ActiveSync to my Exchange server would be a primary requirement.
I don't know of any handheld device that does that.
ActiveSync?
Yeah.
That one does.
Does it? Your Nokia does.
What are you pointing at? A Nokia phone?
I'm pointing at my Nokia E51, which will ActiveSync directly to, and it'll do my calendars and my contacts and my...
Does it do that over the internet, or does it have to be connected to on a local network?
No, over the internet while I'm out and about.
I didn't know you could do that. That's fantastic.
And if I had a personal assistant and they changed my calendar appointments, it would update my calendar in my phone.
I didn't know that was available. That's very good.
Just briefly, because
the iPhone does it extremely well, of course. I'm sorry. Go on, Ed.
I was going to just briefly, because we're running out of time for tonight's Tech Talk Radio. I just want to finally speak tonight about Google facing class action over Buzz privacy. You know, this new thing that they're trying to do.
Yeah.
Lawyers acting for a lady called Eva Hibnick, a 24-year-old Harvard law student.
Because they're
the guys that like filing these cyber suits. A class action against Google for invasion of privacy after the launch of Buzz last week. Hibnick took the step after finding herself automatically opted into the Buzz social networking site.
Mm.
She consulted one of her professors who put her in contact with a legal team. The class action claims to represent 31 million Gmail users and is demanding Google stop such practices and claims financial damages. Now, they did this with books. This is the new way. It's opt in.
You can opt out if you like. You're in,
or you got to opt out, which is the exact opposite of what it is here in Australia, where you're out but you got to opt in. And if you think about it, the only thing in Australia which is probably you're in but you have to opt out was calling number display. Remember that when that first came out? You were in. Otherwise, the system would never have worked. And potentially, that's what happens with Buzz and things like that. You got to be in. Otherwise, what chance has this new technology got to work? So you opt out.
I logged into mail.google.com tonight, as I sometimes want to do, and I noticed there was a new Buzz link there below my inbox option. And I clicked on it, and I went through two or three or four screens, clicked some radio buttons, just disabled everything and said, please go away. But there was quite a bit to do to make it go away.
When I logged into Gmail the other day, I got a big splash screen advertising it and, a link down the bottom to just proceed to Gmail without dealing with this now.
Right.
So, I must log into Gmail. I haven't done it for a day or three because I normally just pick it up on my mobile. It's my repository of all emails. That's where I keep them all.
Gmail's good for that. You don't even have to log into the Gmail site.
That's right, and I don't.
But if you use it right and you use IMAP and you keep everything on the Gmail servers, then, you can, and you can use it as your backup. If you lose your phone or whatever, you can just log in from any web browser.
I kept hitting my 8-gig limit, whatever it is, in Gmail. So I parted with $5 for 12 months the other week. Yeah, so now I've got
more gigs than you know what
more
to do.
More gigs than you know what to do. Nearly 40 gig or something.
My concern is, what do you get in your emails?
Well, I don't get much at all.
Why do you need more than 7 gig for emails?
Well, I just keep everything.
What, and going back to the change of the millennium or something?
No. I don't really. You're right, Andrew. Well, I shouldn't need that amount of space, but
no,
I do.
No, why should you delete your history of emails? I'm a supporter of keeping old emails.
Well, that's one reason. Because
you can
go
back, you can find useful information. Someone says, I sent you that link a while back. I've lost it. And you go back and there it is. It's good to have a history of emails.
There's an
don't save them in your Microsoft Outlook Exchange because you hit the limits fairly quickly and... things just don't go nice after that.
There's an expression that I heard during the week Matthew, our European correspondent.
Sort of like it. Trying to run the time here. Off you go, quick.
Email triage. I hadn't heard that expression before. Have you heard that expression
before? No, I haven't, but I can imagine where this is going.
I was bemoaning the fact that I log into my email and I've been out of the office all day and I've got only down to 120 messages there that haven't been auto-moved to folders and things. And I think, oh, God, I'm spending the next 15 minutes just clicking on those 20, moving them there, clicking on those 15, moving them to, yeah, don't worry about them, clicking on those 35, just hitting delete. And Matthew said, yeah, it's email triage is what you're doing.
Yeah, you scan through them and you find the ones that need to be dealt with now and leave the rest for later.
Push everything into other folders. Yep. Yeah, but I don't read 95% of the emails I receive. They're just unread in folders.
Yes.
There you go.
Excellent.
Am I alone?
Am I normal or abnormal?
No, you're normal. And even though you haven't read them, you know they're there. If you need to refer to them, you can go back and find them.
That's right.
All your
junk mail sitting there just waiting for you. Use a junk mail sitting there on...
all that spare time that I've got.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio, proudly sponsored by D-Link, building networks for people.
Suffering Succotash, this has to be the best technology show on the internet, Tech Talk Radio.
Google been taken to court for forgery.
eBay was the truck and then Telstra pulled the license.
I need my fix of current Tech Talk Radio.
There's some suggestions. They're all going to have SD card slots in them.
There's a new way of watching television that we're seeing emerge.
I can't give you that information over the phone.
Well, if you don't like it, then don't display the sidebar.
When I had a merchant account with the Communist Bank, the material that was the what?
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show, Tech Talk Radio.
Listening to Tech Talk Radio.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics.
Cool. This thing is amazing.
Tech Talk Radio's gadget of the week.
Out of my hole.
Graham wanted to know if my father worked in a tabletop dancing club. No, he doesn't.
I just think trying to work out places where they might not want cameras. And yeah, someone once told me that you can't take cameras into the vanilla hippopotamus or whatever it is.
This week's gadget is the Forus FSV 510 Plus digital voice recorder. This is a digital voice recorder available in 128 meg up to 512 meg storage. The Forus digital voice recorder has built-in flash memory to record audio on the go anywhere. It's ideal for business meetings, personal memos, interviews, wherever you need easy, fast audio recording. Sampling rate ranges from 8 kHz through to 16 kHz. Depending on the model and the sampling rate, the storage capacity will range from 15 hours to 266 hours. There's an external mic input, speaker output, and has its own built-in mic and speaker. It features voice-operated recording, file folders, easy-to-read backlit LCD. Here's the nice thing. It comes with clip-on lapel mic and a headset and also a breakout box which allows for automatic recording of telephone conversations.
Oh, I want one of those.
It takes two AAA batteries and the RRP is $299, but shop around, you'll get better than that. So that's the gadget of the week, Andrew, the Forus FSV 510.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio website of the week.
Are you poised, Graham? Web browser ready to type social, S-O-O-C-I-A-L, social.com. This is a hassle-free online address book service. If you're sick of updating multiple address books and contacts and you're trying to run third-party sync programs, social.com says worry no more. Social works at all the contacts on your computer, your telephone, and your online services like Facebook and Gmail and Yahoo Messenger are all connected and seamlessly synchronized. Any change you make to a contact in any place is automatically replicated to all other contacts everywhere else. There's a short demo video on the site so you can see how it works. One address book, no hassles. That's our website, Andrew, social, social.com.
There is a fine line between genius and madness.
Missed it by that much.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Don't ask! For God's sakes, don't ask!
Houston, we have a problem.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
A family in the United States has accused school administrators of using a school-issued laptop computer to spy on their son. They filed a lawsuit claiming a suburban school district in Philadelphia remotely activated the webcam installed in the computer to secretly take a photo of their son inside his home. The school says the remote webcam function was simply a security measure that was installed in the 2,300 laptops given to students. But parents of children at the school are outraged by what they say is a violation of their privacy.
And rightly so, too.
Very, very late-breaking news just today, in the past hour, CNN has reported that the FBI is now investigating whether federal laws, including wiretap and various computer intrusion laws, have been broken by the high school remote spying incident.
The school said that they only use it if their laptop's reported stolen or whatever, but apparently this boy didn't report his laptop stolen, so why was it activated?
There you go. School district officials have admitted that it was a mistake not to explicitly notify families of the ability to monitor the computers.
But yeah, that was one of your mistakes.
But continue to insist that the feature was only ever intended for the tracking of lost or stolen laptops, as you said, Graham.
Yeah.
That'll do it every time. And that is the end of the show. I'd prattle on a bit longer, but you guys took up most of my time before I came in the last break. Come and join us same time next week. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Bye for now.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, panellists Justin Dunlop, Graham Callaghan and Mark Diggins, expert opinion from Adam Turner, and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications, podcast production by Graham Callaghan. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC. The crew wish to thank all the stations around Australia that take the show. Tech Talk Radio is available for syndication on your local station. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03 9818 2756 or visit our website techtalkradio.com.au for more information. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.